Okay, we're in the middle of our sugya here. And our sugya is Zenehena Vizet Lo Chaser. If someone benefits from something while the other person does not lose, what is the law? Do we go after the fact that he benefited, he should pay for his benefit, or the fact that nobody lost, he doesn't have to pay? And we've been trying to bring a number of proofs either from our Mishnah or from a different Mishnah. And we're referring now to the second Mishnah where this two-story house fell. We thought we had a proof from there. And over there where it said, where it fell down, and the guy in the top story built it up. And he lives there until the guy from the downstairs story pays him, but he doesn't have to pay for rent. And we thought if you don't have to pay for rent, it comes out that you don't, if you benefit, you don't have to pay. And there we said it was different because the ground floor fellow is obliged to provide the guy with an upper story, which he did not give him. So we're going to continue in that same Mishnah. There's a sefer of the Mishnah. So we'll see what Rabbi Yehuda has to say in the sefer of that Mishnah. We try to bring a proof from that. So that puts us again on. We're on Chaf. What did we say? Chaf Aleph Amad Aleph, yeah. Chaf Amad Beis. Chaf Amad Beis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
How come all these colors come up?
It's for different things. Remember, it's color-coded.
In the beginning we didn't have that.
I know, now it's improved. Yes. In other words, look on the right. If it's blue, it's a proof. Uh-huh. A is an answer. S is a, what did we say, S is a statement. And it'll be questions, whatever.
Answer statement.
If the color coding is disturbing, I could take it off. So you tell me.
No, it's very difficult to find where I'm at.
You look for yellow. The
yellow. Yellow, I know. Yellow.
Yellow's always there.
Yeah, but then it's yellow immediately, it's blue.
Well, it's part of that, but it's always yellow. But now telling you, that's a proof.
Okay.
Gordon's now going to bring a proof, so I got to, if you want, if the group wants, I'll take it right off. It'll be no problem for me. For me, I think it's harder whenever you're clicking the next thing because there's so many colors.
That's exactly
slows.
What
I don't know. No. But anyway, Toshma, come and hear a proof from the Seifa of that very same Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, Av Zeh, also this fellow, Hador Bechatzer Chavero, who lives in the courtyard of his friend, Shalom Midauta, without his knowledge. Okay, what does he mean? He says, even this one, the guy, the owner of the upper story, okay, he lives on the premises of the fellow without the latter's knowledge. Okay? So what does he got to do? Tzorech lahalos lo schar. He argues with the Tanakama. He says he has to pay the rent. In that case, where the upper story fell, the whole thing fell down. Right? The Tanakama said, the guy below, he can build up, and he stays there, and he doesn't leave until the other guy pays him for what he built, and he doesn't have to pay rent. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda and argues and says, no, the guy's gotta pay him the rent. Okay, so at least we see at least from Rabbi Yehuda that Shema Mina, what do we see from here? We deduct the rent. Shmami, no, we see from Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Zenehena v'zelo chaser chayev. This one benefited and this one didn't lose. You're chayev. As the notes point out, the owner of the ground story has not lost anything since he didn't want to rebuild his apartment. Therefore, he can't claim that the other fellows living there deprived him of rent he could otherwise have received for that rebuilt apartment. So, at least we see from Rabbi Yehuda, who argues on the rabbi, on the first opinion, Rabbi Yehuda holds Zenehena v'zelo chaser chayev. At least we could say we have at least one Tana who has weighed in on this issue. So let's bring a proof at least to that. To which Gemara says, nope. Shiny awesome that case is different. Why? Mishum shachrurisa da'ashaisa. Because of the blackening of the walls. What does that mean, the blackening of the walls? The question, we assume there was no loss to the guy who owned the bottom. there's no loss because it wasn't renting it anywhere. So saying no, the owner of the ground story does indeed lose by the other ones living there, since the walls thereby become blackened and the apartment no longer looks new. In other words, he's living there for a while. So it's not like there's a new apartment. No, what am I paying you for? A new place? A new place, minus you're there for 2-3 months, let's say. So it's been used up. The question of one who lives on someone else's premises without the latter's knowledge, however, deals with a used house. In other words, our Shaila, the Shaila we originally asked of Zena Hena Vezelo Chaser, is speaking where the person really doesn't lose anything. So when it's, you know, a brand new car, rent, you drive it out of the lot for a few days, you lost 10% of the value right off the top of the bat. Gone. So our Shiloh was dealing with a guy who would normally pay to rent the place, and the person wouldn't pay to rent it, but he has a used house. So what does it matter if somebody goes in the house, he doesn't lose anything? But here, it's a brand new house he built. If it's a brand new house he built and he lives in for a while, now the guy's gonna pay for a brand new house, but 3 months later when he moves in, it ain't gonna be a brand new house, so you gotta deduct from that. Question now, the rabbis have a little debate, how far does this go? Look at the next paragraph. The guy in the top floor built the bottom floor.
Right.
Right, so now so what happens?
Bottom floor was a guy who, on the bottom, he didn't build the new house.
It's his property.
But what's going to happen? What happens? Let's take the next step. What happens?
Eventually,
the bottom guy is going to get it when he pays the guy who built it.
Yeah.
But he will. No, he's going to pay. Now he's going to pay. So Rabbi Yehuda says, when he pays
for some
he use. Can deduct for the rental period. That's effectively the same thing. So that's what he's saying. That's why it's not a proof. That's why it's not a proof. Because there's a real depreciation that's being paid for. It's not a case of Zenahen of Ezel, lo chasar, he's not losing. It's a case where he is losing. Therefore, it's not a proof. Now, look at the comments still. We see from here that even though the value of the benefit far exceeds the loss suffered by the owner. Now let's think for a minute. We say you pay the rent. So what's the rent on a one-bedroom apartment in Eretz Yisrael? Let's say it's $1,000. Okay? So that's the rent. So for 3 months rent, that's $3,000. Well, you know, that's much more than just the blackening of the walls. In other words, we are saying you have to pay, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you deduct the rental fee. Now the rental fee is far more than the blackening of the walls. Blackening walls is not such a big amount. Yet it seems that Tosos brings out that still once you are ready, the owner is entitled to the full amount of the benefit. Look at the commentary, say in the bracket, since the owner suffers some degree of loss, you see.
It's like a paint job. So the wall has less money too. It's a matter of question how much is
so,
the problem.
So in other words, therefore, you know, he has to pay more. So there's machloka. Some say maybe only pays the lessening, but it seems he's paying the rent. So it seems once already is a loss, then the guy can say, why should I want you to be in my house at all? I don't want you in my house at all. Remember, there's always this other thing he keeps bringing back. There is a concept where it says, you know, if you can do someone a favor and it doesn't bother you, you're like a sodomite. So the question is like, so why doesn't that weigh into the issues here? It seems, but not everybody has to do everything. So he's saying, since you're suffering a degree of loss, because you're really wrecking up my brand new house, so it's not considered sodomite behavior to eject other fellow's occupation's premises. Right? So we assume that there is an objection, and the guy's going in there anyway. So then it comes out, so then it's like, well, if you want to do it, then you're going to have to pay the rent. So therefore, it's not a proof from there. Okay, we brought three Mishnahs so far. No proofs from these Mishnahs. Okay, so if we can't bring any proofs from Mishnahs, let's go and see, you know, different rabbis. We're going to ask them their opinion. So we move on. Shalchu bei Rav Ami. So they sent the question to the yeshiva of Rav Ami. Okay. So let's see what they got to say. Well, how do you weigh in on this issue? Amar, he says like this. What do you call this type of rhetorical question as an answer? What a minute, the guy benefited, the other guy didn't lose. So, v'chi meh asolo. What did the guy do to him? Uma achasru. And what did he make him lose? Uma haziku. And what did he damage him? What's he implying in that answer? Should he pay or not?
No, not pay.
Not
no
pay.
Loss. Yeah.
In other words, I haven't done anything. No. Now, the question is, you know, why is he using three expressions? Right? Me'asalo, me'chasrolo, me'hezikolo. Like, why is he giving such a poetic answer of three types of things? So, if we've been following along the types of proofs we wanted to bring and how we refuted the proofs, we seem to see that when you do pay, it's because certain things have happened. Let's look in the last case. The last case, as an opinion, says you gotta pay for the rent. Got to pay for rent. Why do you have to pay for the rent? Because you damaged me. You blackened the walls. Remember what about the case before when you're surrounded on all four sides? If the guy's willing to pay the four, we said one opinion made it that he has to pay for the benefit. We want to refute. We said it's not a proof. Why? Because you made me put more wall up. Put more wall. Oh, so you've caused a lack for me. Or a case from our mission. Want to bring it from our mission. You only eat what you benefit. But there you've damaged the guy. So those were three instances, even though we could hold that you don't pay by Zenem Zachasr, but there are three cases where you pay because it's not a pure case of you're not causing the guy damage. So there's three different ways you can damage the guy. Either the animal ate up all the food, right? You pay for that, no. Right, but you don't pay for the rest. Yeah, but you're paying because you made some kind of damage, or if I blacken the walls, or if you make the guy make a wider thing. Yeah. Those are three different ways. Although you haven't damaged it directly per se, but you still cause some problems, and that's why he's using those three expressions: what did he do? What did he lack? What did he damage? In other words, yeah, there could be cases where you pay, but that's when you're causing some kind of damage. But the pure case we were asking is where there's absolutely zero damage. So there's absolutely zero damage. What's your problem? Why should the guy have to pay? So that's the Yeshiva of Ami. They go with the position of, if I'm not causing any damage, why should I pay? They look at that focus.
But that's not
okay, and that's there's no proofs. That's they're using logic. That's one answer. So far, that's the only evidence we have so far. Is a latter rabbi's yeshiva who feels that you don't have to pay. Right. So in a pure case, where it's a used apartment building, and the fact you're in for a few days isn't causing any type of diminishment, and you haven't caused any type of damage to the fellow, then you shouldn't have to pay. That's their position, and that's you can't disprove it. That's an opinion they're saying.
Didn't we end up yesterday saying that this case with the apartment collapsing is not your standard case because the guy did have an obligation?
Right. Fine.
A normal case anyways.
But that was because wanted to prove you didn't have to pay. But then on the other hand, they wanted to bring a proof from Rabbi Yehuda today, you did have to pay. And even though you pay, he said, well, you pay because you caused a loss. So he's saying generally you wouldn't have to pay unless it's a case where you made some kind of loss. Okay, now comes along Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. Okay, but when the question was asked to Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Omar, he said, Nisyashev Bedover. I gotta think it over. I don't have an answer for you right away. Okay, so they waited a couple days. Hodr Shalchua Kameh Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. So then they sent again, a few days later, they asked Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba again. Nu, so what do you hold on this? Omar, he said, so often you keep asking me questions. In other words,
you didn't have an answer.
If I would have found some kind of good reason, wouldn't I have given you an answer? I mean, you think I'm one of these, don't call us, we'll call you type of people? And you know, I had the answer, not calling you, but if I had an answer, I would have told you the answer. So what are you bothering me? So do you see, Rabbi Ami held that one, so although Rabbi Ami in the first had a quick answer, Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba was undecided.
No answer.
He couldn't decide how to do this. So you see two rabbis, one was clear, the other one wasn't. Okay, so we're trying to find maybe a few other rabbis, find some other positions. Itmar. So the Gemara says, it was said regarding Rav Kahana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So in this same Shaila, Rav Kahana said an answer in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. He said something in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, Eina tzorech lahalos lo schar. You don't have to pay him the rent. Rav Kahana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, I heard from Rabbi Yochanan, you don't have to pay. Zenu zel chaser, potter. Okay? So now, that's a third statement. Now, one second. Rav Kahana, Rabbi Yochanan, answer. So Rabbi Kahana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, you don't have to pay. Yeah. Rabbi Abbo, I'm a Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Abbo said in Rabbi Yochanan, Tzorech lahalos lo schar. You do have to pay. So it seems there are two students quote the same rabbi differently. Rav Kahana quoted Rabbi Yochanan saying he doesn't have to pay. Rav Abbo quoted Rabbi Yochanan saying he does have to pay. Now that's a problem. That's a problem because, you know, the Rebbe was not a politician. Didn't tell one guy what he wanted to hear, the other guy what he wanted to hear. So obviously, we have to find a way of resolving that. Now, how can you resolve such an issue? So the only way you can resolve it is that one of the students may have misinterpreted something that the Rebbe said. In other words, sometimes the Rebbe could say a law, and the student can think, well, that's obviously, he said the law because of this reason. So then he starts quoting the Rebbe, the reason, although the Rebbe never explicitly said the reason. You follow? You know, this happens quite often where rabbis are misquoted. They say one thing, and the students think that the Rebbe meant that in all sincerity. They're not trying to make any problems, but then they're going to give over the law incorrectly because they made the wrong assumption. And that's what Rabbi Papa now is going to say about Rabbi Abbo's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan, this last statement of Rabbi Yochanan. He's going to say, Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says, regarding this matter, Ha de Rabbi Bo, this statement of Rabbi Abbo, rather, that we're quoting Rabbi Abbo, okay, that was the last one, saying that you got to pay, right? That was Lav Beferish Itmar, was not said explicitly. But rather, Elami Klola Itmar. It was inferred from what he said. But the note says, Rabbi Abbo did not actually hear Rabbi Yochanan say this. Rather, he inferred it from something Rabbi Yochanan said. Because Rabbi Abbo drew his own conclusion from a statement of Rabbi Yochanan. But we could see how that was a misguided inference. And if that's a misguided inference, then the student before Rav Kahana, who quoted Rabbi Yochanan saying, you don't gotta pay, is the real opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay? In other words, even though Rabbi Bo quotes Rabbi Yochanan and says, you gotta pay, Rav Papa said, well, yeah, Rabbi Yochanan did say he had to pay in a certain case, but Rabbi Bo misapplied the understanding of it and therefore misquoted his Rebbe, and now we're gonna show you where the misquote came from. Okay, now we're going to show where the, so that's the, for the rest, to the bottom of the page, all we're going to do is bring a different case, a statement of Rabbi Yochanan, and how you can see Rabbi Avo was misled and misquoted Rabbi Yochanan. That's not, because we learn in a Mishnah, in Me'ilah. Now we're going to go to a whole new area of the world of Torah. We're now talking about a person, if a person wants to give a gift to the temple. So what do? You say, this gift belongs to the temple. What happens to all the stuff you give to the temple? What happens after you do that? Just sits in your house?
You get a tax receipt.
Well, no, first of all, you have to give it to the temple. You have to give it to the temple. Now, do you think there was, what if you live far away from the temple? You live in Tzfas, but I want to give a donation to the temple. Well, if I got to go that far. Listen, if you want to give a donation to a school or an institution, and they say, I'd like the donation, so come on over and give it. Come on over and give it. It's too inconvenient for me. You want to call it in over the phone? No, you have to come give in person. How do you think donations would go?
Not so well.
If everyone had to give in person, donations, phew. So the same as they said, Migdash. So therefore there would be people called Gizborim, a treasurer. There'd be treasurers who would hold it. And then he would deal with the stuff, you know, either, and what you can do is you can always, exchange it for money, and you can redeem it and this and that to make it easier. So there would be people called a gizbor, a treasurer of Hekdesh. So now when the treasurer gets it, he has to be very careful with the stuff, because it is holy stuff. So he can only deal with it insofar as either transferring it to the Beis HaMikdash or getting it redeemed and taking the cash and saying the cash pays for this. But one thing that cannot be done when something is made Hekdesh, and what can you not do?
You cannot use it.
Use it for your own personal use.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That, if you do that, the transgression is called Mi'ilah. Mi'ilah means to be Moel. The concept, the way it's called, to be Moel Behekdesh. To be literally misappropriating Hekdesh. That's what Moel. There's a whole Masechta in Shas called Masechas Me'ilah. It only deals with that one topic. All the ins and outs of misappropriating things from Hekdesh. Okay? So we've got a temple treasurer over here. And sometimes you do it on purpose. Sometimes you not do it on purpose. Sometimes it's done purposefully, which is really bad. So the Mishnah that we're going to be quoting now, look at the notes here. The Mishnah deals with Me'ila, the inadvertent misappropriation of consecrated property, which can happen in two ways. Now, how do you misappropriate that? Where do you draw the line? What if I just pick it up, but I haven't done anything with it? I mean, there has to be a point where you've crossed the line. So there's two ways. Either by performing an act of acquisition to the property that legally removes it from Hekdesh. In other words, you pick it up and you acquire it. Or let's say it's a cow, you pull it. You do something that shows you're acquiring it. Or by deriving some kind of actual benefit. Let's say an umbrella. Guy donated an umbrella to the Beis HaMikdash. So it's sitting now in the treasurer's place. So how could you misappropriate it? Either you pick it up for the purpose of taking it.
No.
You know, it's a rainy day. I'm taking it with me. Well, now you've just acquired it, so that's misappropriate. Or what about inappropriate? I didn't take anything. I just opened it up and it protected me from the rain. Right? So now I benefited from it. So one of the two ways, that's how you transgress. So the Mishnah is talking about a treasurer. So now, what is the things that a treasurer can do that would either make it that he has transgressed or has not transgressed? So that's what the Mishnah says. Case number one. Notal even okora shel hekdesh. If he took a stone or a beam that belongs to hekdesh. He just took it. He didn't do anything more than that. Hare ze lo mo'al. This is not considered misappropriation. Now, if another person would do it, who is not the treasurer, that would be considered misappropriation, because if somebody else takes it, then he's made a kinyan, he's made an acquisition for it. But the treasurer, I mean, part of his job is to touch the stuff, move it around. Let's say the curator of a museum.
Yes.
Okay, curator of a museum. If we say to him, hey, what do you do with that picture in your hand? I'm moving it down to another spot. We're putting in a new set of pictures to be on display. I'm supposed to be touching it. But if a stranger off the street comes and he's holding a picture, he doesn't say, well, I decided to move it over. No, you're stealing it. You're taking it. So if you are the gizbar, you're the treasurer, just because you pick it up and move it around, we don't know what you're planning on doing. Could be it's very crowded here, you're moving it over. So when a gizbar takes it, then we cannot say it's a misappropriation. Although if somebody else would take it, it would be a misappropriation.
But if the gizbar takes it and moves it around like he's supposed to do, but in the process he gets a benefit from it at the same time.
Well, that's different. We're not talking about that. He's just moving it around.
Okay.
Because you have to remember, the gizbor's property, his it's his house, so to speak, right? So the stuff's already in his property. It's in his care. So the fact he's moving around, it's all within his property. He hasn't left. And here he has some benefit. He's just moving it around.
Yeah.
There's no benefit there. So he hasn't transgressed anything yet. But what if we take the next step? What if the gizbar comes along and nasa l'chaver? He gives it to his friend. Oh, here, I got an extra umbrella. Why don't you just take it? He just hands it to the other guy. So now who gets the sin?
Gizbar.
The gizbar.
Who Mo'al, the Gizbar, has committed the offense of Me'ila, and the friend, even though he's going to use it afterwards, will not transgress. Why? Since the treasurer is legally empowered to transfer the consecrated object, his giving it to someone else has the force of a legal theft. The transfer of the object out of the domain of Hekdesh is an act of Me'ila and removes the consecration of the object. The treasurer is the one guilty of Me'ila since he is the one that removed it from the domain. The recipient is not guilty of Me'ila by subsequently using the object since it's already become his and unconsecrated. In other words, it's the Gizbar who actually did the transfer, actually the Avera, and now it's once it's out, it's out. We don't say we can have multiple offenses on the same thing.
You would think that if the recipient was aware.
Yeah, they conspired.
Yeah, like if someone gives me...
You only can get one guy.
Yeah, but only the Gizbar.
First of all, we don't know if he knows. We don't know if he knows. We don't know if he knows. It could be he did it unintentionally. It could be the Gizbar did it unintentionally. Doesn't matter. But he's the one who has... Okay, this is all not relevant to our shayla. We're just bringing the whole Mishnah now.
Can we say he benefited because he got to tell his friend that his friend sort of owes him one?
Doesn't matter. Once it's gone... Once it's...
There's a reason why it's...
It doesn't matter. He's not allowed to take it out. The Gizbar is not allowed to take it out of his...
Take it out, so he transgressed by taking it out.
So done. It's been desecrated.
Right.
That's it.
But also saying that, you could also say he benefited himself. He benefited
from
it, just as if...
Okay, but we're saying even if he doesn't benefit, he transgresses. If he benefits, of course he transgresses. Yeah. But here, even he didn't benefit. I just gave it to him. I didn't benefit. That's awesome. Okay. So far, we don't have any... This has nothing to do with our shayla yet. But let's keep going. They're bringing the whole Mishnah as it is.
Wow.
Now, let's say there's something else. What if bana'a l'toch beiso? What if instead of giving it away, the treasurer built it into his own house?
Oh, my gosh.
It's a piece of wood. It's a piece of wood. And I could use a little more support over here. So he just puts it in and builds it in over there. Yeah. Has he taken it out of his domain?
No, but he derives that benefit.
Well, not yet. Hold on, let's see. Now we're going to divide this up now. So it hasn't told us what the law is. There's a few another consideration. Harezelomol, he has still not yet desecrated it until Shehidor Tachteha Shavaprut, until he dwells under it and benefits at least a penny's worth of benefit. In other words, just putting it up is still nothing. Let's say he puts up a beam across. Well, only now that he sits under it and enjoys the shade, let's say. That, because he still hasn't taken it, it's all his domain.
There, yeah.
It's his domain, he hasn't really...
But he benefits from it.
But only when he benefits, that's when it's a problem. Now that's who the guy, he built it into the house. That is the Tanakhama's opinion.
So supposing that beam was weak, and he replaced it with a beam from Hector.
Then he's already
benefiting right away.
Fine. Then he's benefiting. But not everything you do benefits you. What if it's just a little skylight?
There's no benefit. Why would he do it?
He's doing something new. You know what? He wants to build an outside deck that gives shade. And guess what? He had enough of his own wood. He needed one more piece of wood to give shade. So he puts one up there, right? But he hasn't benefited yet because he hasn't gone under it.
Sure, because he didn't find
it. No, he didn't. No, that's indirect. He has to actually enjoy it. Benefit means I enjoy it. I'm having pleasure from it. Just because I set it up for pleasure doesn't mean anything. Either one or two ways. Either you've taken it out of your domain. That's a desecration because you've taken it out of the domain of Hekdesh, or you directly benefit. You don't benefit until you benefit.
Yeah.
Just because you prepared the benefit doesn't mean you benefited yet.
Okay. What Rick said makes a lot of sense. He didn't have to go to Home Depot.
That's not a benefit. That's avoiding something else. Benefit means I'm enjoying that the rays of the sun are being shaded from me. I built a jacuzzi. All you have, until you get into the jacuzzi, what if he takes the bricks and builds a jacuzzi? He hasn't done anything yet. He hasn't gone into it and enjoyed it. The fact that he didn't have to go to that doesn't mean anything. He hasn't benefited from it yet. Nothing's happened. You're saying, well, that's the avoidance of pain. Benefit is not the avoidance of pain. It's the pleasure you get. And there's no pleasure yet. You're just saying he didn't have the headache. That's not a real benefit. You want to call it a benefit. You have to really make use of it in a way that's beneficial for you. He hasn't made use of it in a way that's beneficial for him. So that's the Tanakhama says. Now comes along Va'amar Shmuel, and Shmuel says that all you gotta do, and what does that mean? What will be an example of benefit? If you merely place it on top of the opening of a roof to close it up, but he did not yet nail it in yet. You don't even have to nail it in, just lay it up on top. That would make it that you have benefited. Okay, only then does the Mishnah rule that he does not commit me'ilah until he actually dwells under the object. For since he has not affixed the object to the structure, he's not physically altered the object. But if he would affix it to the structure, then he would be guilty of me'ilah immediately, since the object is then deemed to be physically altered. There's a new point now. If you really would build it in, you've now changed what it is, and is thereby removed from the original domain. In other words, he's saying if you would nail it in, now it's not considered in the hektish's property, because now you've affixed it to be part of the property. But if you put a thing across, even though you haven't nailed it down, but if you're actually going to enjoy it and you're sitting under it, you've got the benefits. Okay, let's just try to get to the proof at least, because we're running out of time. So you can leave your questions for everyone. I might want to just finish up the proof. Okay, fine. Now, so that was the Mishnah. Now comes along, we have to get to where the misinterpretation came. V'yasiv Rav Avoh kameh de Rav Yochanan, and Rav Avoh was sitting in front of Rav Yochanan, right? V'kamer mishmei de Shmuel, and he reported in the name of Shmuel. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan was saying over the following thing. They're learning the Mishnah, and now the Rebbe's telling to the son, what do we learn from this Mishnah? He said, Zos Omeris, this would teach us, right? What if Hador b'chatzer chaver shalom midaitu, if a person lives in another guy's courtyard without his knowledge, Sarach lahalos lo schar. So, he didn't say it. Rabbi Bo said it in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, Rabbi Bo said the name of Shmuel in front of Rabbi Yochanan. He says, oh, I guess we see from this, if a guy lives there without his knowledge, he's got to pay rent. What's going on over here? Let's take a look. Whoa. The Mishnah says that the treasurer commits Mila by dwelling a pruta's worth under the consecrated object, right? You have to dwell under it to enjoy it. But his dwelling under the object is done without the knowledge of its owner. Who's the owner here?
The Beit HaMikdash.
The Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Right? Did he ask permission of Beis HaMikdash?
No.
So he didn't ask permission. So what's he really doing? He's dwelling, making use of something without permission. Now, is he benefiting from it?
Yes.
Yes. Is the Beis HaMikdash losing?
No.
No. Right? So now, but this dwelling under the object is done without the knowledge of its owner, which is Hegdish. Right? And Hegdish sustains no loss in the process. This proves then that one who dwells in the fellow's yard without the latter's knowledge must indeed pay him rent. Right? Mi'ilah is not the benefiting from Hegdish per se, but rather the taking of benefit from Hegdish, as would be indicated by the monetary obligation to pay for that benefit. In the case where there would be no obligation to pay for that benefit, the benefit itself would not constitute Mi'ilah. In other words, is this a payable benefit or not? Let's say you benefit, but it's not worth any money. You know, what if you do something, but no one would give you any money for that benefit? Right? Then you don't pay. So if the law is that if you use it without permission and the king didn't lose, you don't pay, then how could you be maul?
Yeah.
The fact that you're maul means it's something that normally would be charged for. Yeah. Right? Let's say it wasn't Hektish's.
Right.
Let's say it was somebody else's. Then you'd have to pay. The fact that we say you are Moel means you have done something that is a real thing that would have to really give money for. So what, in other words, what's happening is, they were learning this Mishnah, and Rav Abbo is sitting in front of his Rebbe, and he says, you know, I heard from Shmuel, from this Mishnah, you could see, it's a proof that if you do something without permission, and you bet you gotta pay.
Yeah.
Now here's the critical point. Vishasakle, and Rabbi Yochanan did not respond to what the student said. Right? When that was reported. So now what do you think if you report and the Rebbe didn't respond, what do you think the Rebbe's opinion is?
He agreed.
Silence is agreement. So Ihu Savar, he thought, Midashasek, well, since he was quiet, Modele, he agreed. Oh, so you see, the proof is from this Mishnah, since you gotta pay, since you've transgressed, means it's something you normally pay for. So he figured he agreed. But the answer is no. Valohi, that's not so. The fact that he didn't answer was that he agreed, but Ashkuchi lo Ashkuchi, he just didn't pay attention because really there was no proof at all. Okay. It was such a preposterous, Narish guy. You think I answer everything? Like the Mayor Ford. You think I answer every question they ask of me? I'm going to answer everything. So it really wasn't the same. Now why is it not the same? Beautiful answer. One more minute. Kid Rabba, like Rabba, because Rabba always says to Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Hektish Shalom Midas. When you take something of Hektish without its knowledge, what he's going to say is, on the next page, there's no such thing. Because Hektish is not like a human being. A human being can very well not know what's going on. But God, what are you going to say? God doesn't know what's going on? So when you take from Hektish without Hektish knowing, what is it like? It's like kehedid midasim. It's just like from an ordinary person with the person's knowledge. You can't say, well, God doesn't know. You know, I didn't tell anybody God doesn't know. God knows. And therefore, there's no such thing as benefit without deriving, without the knowledge of Hegdish. For the owner of Hegdish is God himself, and God is all-knowing. Therefore, benefiting from Hegdish is always analogous to benefiting and honoring with that person's knowledge. As explained above, there are those that hold that the significance of without his knowledge is not so much the owner's lack of awareness, but rather the fact that he has not protested in advance to the one making use of the property. Okay? So that's why it's a different thing. So therefore it's not a proof at all. What an idiot! What kind of proof is he bringing? The guy didn't know. What do you mean the guy didn't know? The guy, Hashem knows everything! So that's the most ridiculous proof I ever heard in my life! So the fact Rabbi Yochanan didn't respond didn't mean he agreed! Right. So therefore there were two rabbis who quoted Rabbi Yochanan. We see the second rabbi was wrong. And what are we left with? The first rabbi who says you don't pay. Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have therefore, at least what we've done today, we haven't proved anything from the Mishnaic level. But we have three latter rabbis. One said clearly you don't pay. The other one said I don't know. And we haven't said from Rabbi Yochanan you don't pay. So where do we have it so far?
Don't pay.
You don't pay. So far we're holding at Sanhedrin Zalachasar does not pay. No proofs from any Mishnayos. But two latter rabbis have said you don't pay. And we'll see that will become the halacha. That is the halacha. Senehen of his halachasar, you do not have to pay. But tomorrow we have to clean up and there's going to be certain circumstances where there'll be exclusions to that.
You have to pay.
Okay.